Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival for March 29th, Tuesday, year of our Lord, 2016. I'm sitting in for Melody. She'll be joining us after the first commercial break. Our guest is Wendy Wilson today. Wendy's usually here on Wednesdays. She should be joining us in a couple of minutes. Before she gets here, I will give you the market report. Let's just update and see if I can get the most current. All right, gold is up $19.40 today, big day for gold, to $1,241.70 per ounce. Silver is up 10 cents to $15.45 an ounce. Platinum is up 26, big day for platinum, $973 per ounce. Palladium is up 10. To $582 per ounce. Dow Jones is up 99 points to 17,633. NASDAQ is up 79 points to 4,846. New York Stock Exchange is up 76 points to 10,182. Standard & Poor's is up 17 points to 2,054. And U.S. dollar, let me give you the crude oil first. Crude is down 84 cents to $38.55 per barrel. And there's reason to believe that the crude oil surge that took place over the course of the last month or so was due to manipulation of the market, a big play in shorts. And now that that play is over, it may be that crude is falling back. Hard to say where it's going for sure, but it may drop down below 30 before long. The U.S. dollar index is probably the main story today. It's down 0.86 points to 95.12 on the U.S. dollar index. That probably laid the foundation for the big day in precious metals. Almost 20 bucks up in gold and so on. Maybe talk more about that when Melody arrives here after the first break. Right now, Wendy Wilson should be here. Wendy, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing, Al?
Just fine. It's kind of confusing to me. It's usually Wendy Wilson Wednesdays, and today it's a Wendy Wilson Tuesday.
I know. Well, hey, you know, we roll with the punches. We're flexible.
Not at my age, you don't. You try to avoid the punches as best you can rather than roll with them. But we're going to talk about blood type linked to personality today. Is that right?
Yeah, Yeah. The new research out there is revealing more important details about our human blood. The Japanese are really into this research. They're finding all these links and connections between blood and personality. So after more than 60 years of their research, they're saying our blood is more than just a blood type. It's unique. They say like a fingerprint. So according to Canadian naturopath James D. Amato, he says the Japanese see this connection between biology, genetics, and personality. So even some European and Asian companies are using blood analysis in their job hiring processes. They're using it on dating sites and even in marketing. So everybody's heard about that familiar book, you know, Eat Right for Your Blood Type. Remember that?
Again, you're talking to a senior citizen, and you should not use the word remember when you're talking to senior citizens. That's not necessarily a good word to use. No, I don't remember.
Okay, well, I got herbs for that.
Okay.
But listen, there was a big book. It was really hot, I think, in the 90s and early 2000s. But people are asking, does what we eat really affect our DNA and our blood and our personality? Well, the Bible said life is in the blood. So I think it's real important that regardless, we should keep that river of life clean and as healthy as possible. So there are a few blood types, just in case our audience doesn't know what they are. We have blood type O, blood type A, blood type AB, and blood type B. And then you've got the positives and negatives as well in there. The most common of most research, more research on one blood type, and that's blood type A. I don't know why, but they've done more research on that type than any other. Now, in Japan, 40 to 74% of that population is blood type A. Mm-hmm. In the United States, the percentage of people with blood type A is 40%, and 38% have blood type O. Now, blood type O is the universal and compatible blood type with other types of blood type, but a person with blood type AB positive is known as the universal recipient, can receive blood from any type if they needed it. Now, the National Blood Data Resource Center, AL, says that half of the blood transfusions in the United States for whole blood go to people over the age of 69 years of age, and the demand is increasing. So on average, any day of the 365 days a year, on average, the number of blood units that are used are 38,000. That's a lot of blood.
I agree. Yeah, that's a lot per day.
I know. Well, let's get down to the Japanese research, what they were talking about, blood types. It's all pretty positive, actually. I know Frank had asked me, you know, what about the people out there that are kind of grumpy and naughty? What kind of blood type are they? Well, the research didn't get into that. So we're going to keep it on the positive. Blood type A, they say those folks have the characteristics of being cooperative, sensitive and clever, passionate and pretty bright. They put others first, and they sacrifice their own emotions, which really probably relates to why they're often very anxious, because all those emotions bottled up and all. They are influenced by surroundings, such as their space and color of their surroundings. They're usually up on the latest trends, and they sometimes don't sleep very well. And they make pretty good leaders, but they tend to struggle with stressful situations. They do report that in Japan, blood type A types gravitate to research jobs, and they strive for perfections. And for this reason, it's said that the blood type A's in Japan perfected the electronic industry after World War II. So they tend to have good immune systems, blood type A's, but they do have low stomach acid from birth, which tends to make them susceptible to acid reflux conditions later in life. And their common career choices, Al, are accountant, economist, writer, and computer programmer. Interesting, huh?
Well, I am blood type A.
Oh,
so I'm listening,
okay.
And I'm agreeing with the high notes and kind of disagreeing with the low notes, but they're probably all true just the same.
Okay. Well, let's move on to blood type B. Those folks are very balanced, goal-oriented individuals. They tend to be thoughtful like type A's, but they're ambitious like type O's. They are very charming and empathetic, and are less likely to challenge or confront someone. They are very flexible and usually have quite a few friends. They are good at reading people's character, but are also somewhat impulsive, and they like to forge their own trail. They are very strong on optimism, and blood type Bs, they are have strong immune systems as well. Their immune systems are strong, but they're somewhat weak against viral infections for some reason. They also struggle with regulating their blood sugars, especially if they're eating too much sugar and carbohydrates. And blood type Bs often gravitate towards careers in the military, talk radio show host, journalist, hairdresser, and cook. Well, I'm not a type B, and you're not a type B, so what are we doing on the radio?
I have no idea. I've been asking myself that question for years, but what can I do? What can I tell you?
Right. Well, blood type AB is next up. They tend to be quite shy, Al, but charming personalities nonetheless, and they tend to be the popular ones in school. They can be outgoing as well, but they tend to flip-flop between being hesitant and being confident. And they pick the hill they want to die on so they don't sweat the small stuff. They sometimes come off as a bit flaky, but excitement seems to swirl around them, so there's never a dull moment. They don't like to be stressed out. They don't handle stress very well, and their immune system tends to be on the low side. They like to break out of the mold and think outside the box. They don't like labels, and their common career choices seem to be bartender, lawyer, teacher, sales representative, and social worker. There you go, for ABs out there.
I understand that. When you say they've got low immunity.
Yeah, they tend to be have low resistance, you know? They seem to catch pretty much everything that comes around, you know?
Well, if they have low immunity, do you think that has anything to do with them being the universal recipient?
Probably. I would think.
I mean, if you had stronger immunity, you might be less able to accept a dissimilar blood type. Where are these people with low immunity? Do you think that has anything to do with
it? I don't know. That's a good question. I think they may want to do some research into that, being that universal, that may have weakened them a bit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read anything on that, so I'll keep my eyes peeled. But blood type O is the last one, and those folks tend to be very physical and athletic. They like to stay busy. They tend to handle stress very well and make good leaders. It says that, you know, it's lonely at the top, and these folks tend to be loners. They're also very intuitive. They stay focused. They're self-reliant. They like to take calculated risks. They make excellent entrepreneurs. They have strong immune systems and well-developed physiques due to their active lifestyle. They tend to have a sluggish blood flow, though, and they have to maintain regular vigorous exercise to counter that. Type O's are also typically self-confident and creative. They have vision. Most are organized, but a bit stubborn. And they like to keep people guessing in a lot of instances, and they are focused and they like to reach goals. So they have an agenda, you know, and they want to reach it. Statistics are showing type O's like careers in banking, politics, gambling, ministry, and pro athletics.
Sounds like trouble to me.
Well,
TV evangelists, politicians, the rest of this sort of thing, I don't know. I'm going to have to – are blood types going to replace the horoscope?
Well,
sit around and they would they'd meet somebody in a bar and say, are you a Sagittarius or whatever?
I hope they don't.
And we're
going to
do blood types now instead?
I hope we don't turn into a horoscope, but you know, I could see, you know, the Japanese doing that because they're very superstitious anyway. It's real important though for all of us, regardless of blood type, to keep our blood as clean and as debris free as possible. And what I mean by that, not only are waste products coming off as the blood cleanses cells after the cells receive nutrition and oxygen, but we're also talking about things like too much sugar floating around the blood, you know, that's very toxic. So we want to make sure that we have healthy blood. And because if you had to go for a blood transfusion, a lot of people don't realize it's kind of like an organ transplant because there's tissue as well mm-hmm. as liquids, fluids in that blood. And blood can get weighed down with a lot of toxins. And the largest organ in the body is the first organ to let you know that the blood is toxic when it can't heal a wound. And diabetics have those troubles, you know.
How safe is the American blood supply? We had problems with AIDS, for example,
yeah.
HIV back. I don't know. It was a big issue probably in the 90s.
Right.
Is that still a significant issue, or has that been pretty much eliminated?
I think it's better. I think it's probably as good a safeguard as it's going to get. And it's just like everything else. You know, nothing's 100%. Just like, you know, your computer's not 100% safe. Your bank account's not 100% safe. So I think those checks and balances are going to be as good as the people that are executing them. So, and if people are not going to do their job well, then things, you know, kind of slip through the cracks. Personally, if I had to have surgery, knock on wood, I don't, I would donate my own blood ahead if I could. If I had to, go in for a procedure, I'd also take immune boosting herbs 2 weeks prior, you know.
And where would we get immune boosting herbs?
Yeah, but if you get immune boosting herbs, make sure there's no garlic in it because that acts like a blood thinner. And if you're having surgery, you don't want that. But we do have other immune boosting herbs without the garlic at Apothecary Herbs. We also have a blood cleanser that's very good. It's sweeping the blood and it's has the red clover in it, and it has all these neat little herbs that tend to sweep the blood system, even cancer cells. So, folks can find out more about that by giving us a call. We have a free catalog we can send them. That number is toll-free at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or they can visit us online now at thepowerherbs.com.
We've got a couple more minutes, Wendy.
Well, I think maybe we could prime the pump a little bit, Al. What I've been working on today, we could discuss next week. It's kind of in the works. But I'm researching the new injectable. Well, it's not really new. It's been used since 92, but new evidence is cropping up about what's going on with this particular drug. It's an injectable birth control product. But it's also given to women who aren't so much worried about birth control, but this product also stops their periods. They want to get rid of their period for a while. And so what are the consequences to that? You know, that's what I'm looking into. And they're pretty significant. So I think next week we can delve into that and maybe save some women some grief out there, because this injectable birth control product is, I think, pretty dangerous for women all around.
Do you think we're getting adequate protection out of the FDA?
No.
Are they really protecting us at all up there, or are they just certifying some drugs to be sold, and if people die, too bad?
Well, no, I mean, I don't think they're in the market to protect the American people. Actually, when we talk about this drug next week, it was actually in the 70s, the company that was making it was trying to get it approved in the 70s. FDA would not approve it because it was so detrimental to health. And so how in the world it got passed by 1992, that's a big question.
Well, inquiring minds want to know, but we'll find out next week. In the meantime, Wendy, thank you for being on the program. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Look forward to talking to you next Wednesday, a week from now. Melody should be joining us shortly. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Haddisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, again, as I say every day, I just want to remind the listeners to visit the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, of course, these programs are archived there on a daily and infinity archive, I should say. So you can listen today, yesterday, or how about 3 years ago, Al? 4 years ago?
I don't think that would be very relevant. It might be amusing. I don't think it'll be relevant.
Oh, you might be surprised. You know,
but I'm not going to find out because I'm not listening to news reports from 3 years
ago. Have you ever heard the saying? As much as it goes, something like, as much as things change, they remain the same.
Well, I get that.
So, and it's very much our fiat currency. You know, again, all these things change. You know, we certainly see, you know, multiple problems increase through the years, you know, since 2008, since 2001, since 1991, since 1987. But the one thing that they all have in common that hasn't changed is we're on a fiat currency. And here we are today bringing it full cycle, or circle, I should say. And
or psycho.
Psycho.
That explains what's going on in politics to some degree. It seems like we are surrounded by psychopaths, and maybe we have going full cycle rather than full cycle or full circle. So what is it, Melody? Circle, cycle, or psycho?
Both.
Uh-huh. It's actually three of them. But
all three.
Uh-huh. I got an article here from The Hill on Trump holds 21-point lead in new national poll. GOP presidential frontrunner Donald Trump holds a 21-point lead over primary rival Ted Cruz. A new NBC News SurveyMonkey online tracking poll released Tuesday found Trump leading the Texas senator 48% to 27%. Ohio Governor John Kasich, who gained 2 points since last week, follows with 18%. When it comes to the possibility of a contested convention, the survey found that a majority of registered Republicans and those who lean Republican, 57% of them, believe that Trump should win the nomination if he wins a plurality of delegates, even if he fails to capture a majority of delegates. So the point is, just another moment in the presidential primaries. And for the moment, Trump is up 21% over Ted Cruz. Doesn't mean that Trump is necessarily going to win, but certainly it looks, I don't know what Cruz can do to overcome that kind of Trump support. Now, Cruz can pull out enough primaries. He may still overcome that support. It's not impossible, but really, it looks as if certainly Trump is going to come to the convention as the favorite. And if he doesn't have a majority, he's going to be so far ahead. I mean, he's almost double the support that's available to Kasich and Cruz. Matter of fact, he is. So, you know, it's one of those things where somebody ought to say, look, he's won the nomination. Give him the nomination. But we'll watch and see. If we have a contested convention, it's going to be hard to predict what's going to happen. If Trump doesn't win this on the first ballot, then we're going to see some drama and maybe riots. I mean, if something happens at the Republican convention, which I believe is this July, and it turns out that Trump is not nominated, even though he comes in with a plurality of the vote, we're liable to see something really, there's going to be some must-see TV at the Republican convention. So here's another, most of these elections are kind of dull. They don't pay much attention. Yeah. We hear about the surveys and the polls and the rest of that. And somebody's talking and speaking, and we might pay some attention to them if we really like them and the rest of that sort of thing. But most previous elections have been kind of dull. But this one doesn't figure to be dull. It certainly hasn't been so far. And what's even now, a lot of people are going to be tuning into the Republican convention just to see what happens. This is going to be an extraordinary story. So in any case, Trump is ahead for now, and we'll see where it goes. Comment?
No, not at all. I didn't know if you had touched on a $20 goal today.
Well, I talked about it at the beginning of the program, but if you have something you'd like to add, feel free.
No, I just it was nice to see gold up $20 today to recapture some of the pressure on it. Gold is still up 17% from the first of the year, and I think what's interesting is you had Chairman Janet Yellen come out, and she says they're going to proceed cautiously in raising interest rates because of the global economy is presenting heightened risks. Prior to this statement at a speech that she made in New York, it was data friendly. You know, they were, pretty much looking to a four-time rate increase this year because they were so sure that the U.S. economy was, the data was going to support that. And I find it interesting that she's changing her tune, and she really sounds more a little bit more like Bernanke, because he was always, we will always accommodate if necessary. You know, he was always more stern as far as, supporting the markets and being there for policy, you know, should the economy come adrift of any problems and so forth. And I think she's saying pretty much the same thing in her speech today in New York, which I find interesting that, she's probably being you know, supported or you know, she's being trained in what to say and so forth to keep the markets all calm. And she also says in her speech today that there are things that she can do. There are things that that they will be able to respond. And this is what Bernanke always says, that she says, with the federal funds rate so low, the FOMC's ability to use conventional monetary policy to respond to economic disturbances. So, you know, she, you know, is saying and calming and supporting the markets. What I also find interesting, too, is you had gold going up with the quarter point increase in December, and now you're also seeing gold go up when they're saying that, you know, perhaps we might be holding off on those rate increases. So it's a sign for those people who don't believe in gold and for those who question whether gold will go up or down in some sort of change in monetary policy with interest rates, shows you that gold is going to respond to both because our situation is so dire.
Well, that's,
and that's what people have to remember. We're in troubled times, and you know.
Well, we're not exactly in them, but we're right next to them.
No, we're in them. It doesn't. The markets don't show it. You know, the markets are still showing. I think I saw the stock market was up. And there's a lot of economic reports coming out this week also. Consumer confidence was supposed to come out today. I didn't see what those numbers were. But non-farm payrolls is supposed to be out later on in this week. And, you know, there's a lot of reports this week that we'll see how it affects. Plus, it's the end of the first quarter. So you'll see, and I mentioned this last week, you can see a lot of strange things happen in the markets at the end of each quarter because everybody's adjusting their, you know, they're doing a lot of window dressing for their quarterly statements that get sent out, you know. So it was good to see gold up today. And so that means I think no matter what reports come out this week, no matter what they say, I think gold will probably respond positively. So it was go ahead.
You compared Janet Yellen to Ben Bernanke.
I didn't compare.
Well, you said they were operating under, you just said you thought they had a similar philosophy.
No, I said she's supporting, and that's why I always said she never supported the markets in the same way Bernanke did previously. You know, she was all about the data. You know, whatever the data says, whatever the data says. Well, he was more of about, you know, we'll adjust, we're here for you, just pretty much like in Europe, you know, hey, we'll do whatever is necessary in order to, you know, support the markets, to support the economy. That's what Ben Bernanke always used to say. Now she's sort of saying the same thing. I'm not comparing. They're totally different.
Well, my point is, Helicopter Ben got his nickname, Helicopter Ben, helicopter, because he said that in the event of a depression, he'd dump cash on society out of a helicopter. He'd spread it all over, and he would stop the depression. He was convinced that you could stop an economic depression with monetary policy. Right? And it appears, and Janet Yellen appears to believe the same thing. She says, oh, we still have lots of options, and we have things we can do. I don't think they do. And I think beyond that, you know, this whole idea of quantitative easing and lowering interest rates to irrationally low levels, even negative interest rates, it's all based on the fundamental idea that they can prevent an economic depression. And I wonder if they can. They've certainly been able to postpone it, but can they prevent it? And I think the answer may be no. In fact, I'm even wondering, and I've written this in a previous article a couple of weeks ago, I'm wondering whether a depression may not be a healthy thing. And Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen are acting as, oh, my God, whatever happens, we can't have a depression, we can't have this, can't have that. Well, maybe they're right and maybe they're wrong. Because I think that an economic depression may be the economic equivalent to vomiting after you've had too much to drink. It's a way of cleaning the crap out of your system, all right? It's a way of getting rid of people that have overpriced their products, getting rid of people who have gone too deeply into debt. And it's a way of sort of zeroing out all of the insanity that follows an economic boom. You purge the insanity with an economic depression. And if that were true, if it's really a healthy phenomenon, a necessary phenomenon, then the whole idea of helicopter bends is, oh, we're going to dump money out of helicopters to prevent the depression. Maybe it's not a good idea. Maybe it was never a good idea, and maybe it can't work. And increasingly, when you look at what's happened with quantitative easing, where people are dispersing money in Europe, in the United States, in Japan, in China, and the low into the near zero or even negative interest rates, they're designed to prevent the depression, but maybe the depression is the cure that we need. Maybe we need a depression. And that's hard to believe, and a lot of people, oh, that's crazy talk, but maybe not. Maybe it's built in because they're not succeeding. Their attempts to stop this, to stimulate the economy, to prevent having a depression, and more importantly, to stimulate the economy, those attempts have been frustrated, and they're fighting some kind of forces that I don't think they fully understand. There may just be an attitude in the system that's built in somehow where we've had our high, we had our boom, now we have to take our medicine. And if you don't want to take your medicine, you're going to feel hungover until you do. So does that sound plausible to you, Melody? Or
well, no, the system has to be purged. I mean, no, there's because we're just too far gone. And, you know, I believe the Federal Reserve, I believe, you know, the government, they do have the ability to throw more money at a bad situation. They have the bullets, but their target's already dead. You know, and it's one thing to throw money at a system when the, you know, if the underlying fundamentals are there, you know, to help it along, but those underlying fundamentals are gone. They've been stripped. They've been abused. Their corruption. It's debt. And
you know, one of the other points about this, you talk about throwing money at the situation. They don't have any money. They have currency. They have fiat dollars, which are not truly money. They are just currency. All right? And they are perhaps trying to implement economic remedies that might work in a world where we still had real money.
But so the underlying fundamentals,
fiat,
exactly.
Or we're just throwing fiat. Maybe the fiat just can't do the job. And maybe that's part of the problem here. But we're off in a strange world right now. We're off in a world that I don't think anyone clearly understands on an economic basis. I mean, there'll be a bunch of hypotheses, and somebody may have the right idea, but I don't know that anyone can sit back and absolutely say, truthfully, I know that I understand what's going on, and these are the problems, and if we do this, and this, we solve the problems. I think they're just guessing, and they're hoping this thing works out, and who knows, maybe it will. But for the moment, that does not appear to be that does not appear to be happening in our immediate future.
Hey, you know, when you first go on a fiat currency, it works. You know, hey, look at all the government programs. And that's what happens. You have government programs. The money is thrown into the economy. We had bridges built. We had roads built. You know, we had, people had jobs. People had welfare. People had Social Security. So you throw a bunch of money at it. But the problem is there's never any accountability for it. And no one ever stops. Because along the way, you create these abuses. You create the corruption. You create, and it just turns into the beast that we have today. And now you can say whether that the creation of our fiat system here was by design, was by accident, was by something that was just, oh, gee, here, let's do this, and it turned into where we are today. But it's just
it has failed every time it's
big. It has failed. And it will fail.
Five times in the history of
exactly.
The world, right? This, and it's blown up every time.
And it's blown up every time.
They know it's going to blow up. But when the people set it, they also know that they're going to get a generation or two of a fast ride. And the people that are responsible for establishing the fiat currency, they're going to live large. And what they're just saying, screw whoever's coming down, who's coming later. They'll have to pay the bill, but I'm going to live large in the meantime. Let's take a break for a couple of commercials. Melody and I will be back in just a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Zero Hedge. California says to hell with economics. We'll hike minimum wage to $15 an hour. Now, they don't intend to move their minimum wage to $15 an hour this year. It will be a series of small incremental steps that could go on for another 4 or 5 years before they finally reach $15 an hour. But nevertheless, here's an article dealing with it. In January of last year, a grinning Doug McMillian appeared in a video message posted to Walmart's website to announce that the world's largest retailer was set to implement one of the, quote, largest single-day private sector pay increases ever. But almost immediately, things started to unravel. They were going to give a big raise to the Walmart employees. However, once they started this, first Walmart moved to squeeze suppliers by forcing them to plow their excess cash into savings rather than in-store advertising. Next came storage fees, and eventually Walmart even tried to compel vendors to pass along any savings they might have recognized from the yuan devaluation, Chinese yuan. But squeezing the supply chain proved inadequate to make up the money spent on higher wages, and so Walmart did what anyone with any common sense knew they would end up doing. They fired thousands of people and closed hundreds of stores. So here's the point. Hooray, we're going to raise the minimum wage. Sounds like a great idea. What could be wrong with that? Well, what can be wrong with it is when you do, you can ultimately put a lot of people out of business. We can't afford to hire as many people at $15 an hour as we can at $10 an hour. We're going to have to fire some people. That's almost certainly the idea behind this is they come up and say, we're going to raise the minimum wage, and then these people have more money to spend on stuff, and it will stimulate the economy, and we'll all be better off, and we'll all get wealthy. But the truth is, once they raise that minimum wage, a lot of people are going to be unemployed who weren't previously unemployed. And it'll be good for the ones who remain employed. They get an extra several dollars per hour, and they'll say, yippee. But at the same time, we're going to have other people that are unemployed, and they're not going to get any money at all except on welfare. So now there's a question here. At what point does this balance, and is there a net gain with an increase in the minimum wage, or is there a net loss? Over this last weekend, California lawmakers and labor union representatives followed Walmart's lead and struck a deal to raise the statewide minimum wage to $15 an hour. However, a minimum wage increase could harm small businesses like the Marmalade Cafe, which has 7 locations. First, you have to raise prices, and they're talking to the owner of the business, and he says, okay, if minimum wage is going up, he's got to respond. If he wants to stay in business, he says he has to raise prices on his food. All right? So higher prices for diners. That's first. And second, we'll fire some folks. And the people who keep their jobs will have to be more efficient. That means they're going to have to work harder. And somewhere in all of this is the idea that there's no free lunch. You can't just sit back and say, all right, let's pay the help $100 an hour. No, $500 an hour. No, $1,000 an hour. How about that? We'll pay all the help. It'll be the minimum wage, $1,000 an hour. Well, okay, set up the minimum wage for $1,000 an hour. But when you do, you have to raise prices. You got to fire some people and make the ones who have jobs work harder. You can't just sit back and arbitrarily say the minimum wage, we're going to raise it, and we'll all live happily ever after. There are consequences, and again, this is that analogy of squeezing the balloon. You can squeeze the balloon at one end, but it's going to bulge someplace else, and maybe in a place you don't expect. And then it goes on and it says there's a dynamic that we've seen in Walmart's experience with wage hikes. You have to preserve the wage hierarchy.
Yeah.
And what they mean by that, you can't hike wages for the lowest paid workers in the store or in the community, in the economy, and then expect those further up the pay ladder to be satisfied with what they made before. Employees already making $15 an hour will demand a raise as well. It's a chain reaction. And the net result on all of this, and maybe the intended result, you know, they say we're taking care of the poor. Well, maybe we are. I don't doubt that raising wages are going to help. Certainly some minimum wage will help some of the poor. But when we raise that minimum wage, we are going to contribute to inflation.
Yes. Huh?
Which the Federal Reserve has been largely unable to stimulate since the 2008 Great Recession. They've been trying to cause significant inflation without success. The idea behind pumping billions of dollars every month into the economy under the guise of quantitative easing was intended to increase the money supply, which should have caused inflation, but it didn't. The lowering interest rates down to nothing, where people can borrow money and not have to pay much for the loans, should have increased the money supply, but it didn't. Should have caused inflation, but it didn't, at least not so far. So it may be that one of the ulterior motives for raising the minimum wage for, you know, the poor people in this country is to cause inflation. So what do you think, Melody? Is it a good idea, bad idea, both to raise the minimum wage?
No, I mean, the problem isn't the wages. The problem is inflation already. Our cost of living anymore is so high. I mean, affordable housing, our food costs, our energy costs, our heating costs, our gasoline costs. I mean, everything is so high. And everything that you mentioned, too, there is a chain reaction. And, that's the biggest complaint from the Federal Reserve is wages. You know, they're not going up. Well, why aren't they going up? Because we don't have an economy to support rising wages. That's why. And so, yeah, a lot of people are going to get laid off. A lot of people are going to get fired. And, you're not going to have, and you do have that chain reaction. So therefore, in order for businesses to support what they're being forced to do is, lay people off, cut back hours, and, you cut back hours, there goes your health care and everything else.
Well, we've already been doing that in a sense by reducing people from full-time jobs to part-time jobs.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, these central planners have some brilliant idea. We're so smart. We got a degree in economics. We have PhDs. We know how to work this system. They don't know diddly. They don't know diddly. All right? And they are coming up with harebrained ideas in hopes of maintaining whatever fundamental economic theory they cling to and say, well, if we do this, then we could prove that the theory is still valid. And the reality is somebody needs to look at some of these theories, and someone needs to really consider whether or not central planning works. You can ask the former Soviet Union, how well did it work over there? Every place we set up the heavy-duty socialist central planning, what happens? It winds up generating poverty, maybe a police state, sometimes even economic and even national destruction. And yet we've got some morons, some enthusiastic intellectuals in the Federal Reserve system, in the government, they say, no, we got this. We can control this. And maybe they can't. And it's one of the lessons that we're going to look for, and we're going to see if that's a true story over the course of the next however long it takes before we get back to some sort of a genuine economic recovery. And if the government can't manipulate that recovery, and the Federal Reserve can't manipulate that recovery, then people are going to have to sit back and say, wait a second. Maybe you guys caused this problem to begin with, maybe intentionally, maybe by accident, but it was your hubris, your arrogance. Oh, yeah, we can control this. And it was a big mistake. Who was the first one to start doing this to a significant degree, at least in recent times, Melody? You remember? Ronald Reagan, he set up the plunge protection team, but we could trace this back further to Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah.
I mean, central planning and the rest of it. The government's not that smart. And inevitably, they go too far. You know, there's another thing. It's like the pensions for government employees. Government just came out and made these idiot promises to government employees that they'd be able to retire after 20 years and at twice the amount what you could get for Social Security. Let the idiot taxpayers work until 65 and the government employees could retire at 40. And let the idiot taxpayers fund the government employees' pensions. What's going to happen is that government pensions are taking a beating already. And it's going to get worse. And a lot of people are going to say, but wait. The congressman. My congressman told us we could get a fat free lunch out of this deal. And we were just working the system. And now the system is working us. And we don't like it. We were expecting to be able to rob the taxpayer, and you're telling us we can't? We have to provide for our own pensions? And I'm saying, yeah, that's what's really coming down here. We are going to learn this lesson that it's up to each of us to provide for our pensions, for our retirement, for our savings. You have to do that. And government says, oh, no, we'll take care of you. You can be as big an idiot as you want to be, and the government will still bail you out. Well, I don't think the government can anymore. I think they have shot their wad, and I don't think they can bail us out. I think we're going to go into this thing, and sooner or later, everybody's going to be screaming for some sort of savings and some sort of capital. And those of you who have savings are going to be in a prime position to take advantage of extraordinarily low prices. And the rest of the world, if we go into a depression, the rest of this country, I mean, they'll be selling homes for 20% of their value today.
Oh,
cars, God knows where it's going to go. Who knows where it's going to go? But it won't mean anything if you don't have either savings or the capacity to actually produce goods and services that the public needs and values and that you can make a profit off of during the Great Depression. If you're productive, yes, you can do okay. If you're not productive, you're going to be beat up badly. If you have savings, you'll be able to do okay to the extent of those savings. Don't have savings, can't produce, you are going to go through the, you know, one of the more painful periods in American history. So what are we going to do? Well, do you have savings?
You know, it's funny because I hear people talk about their pension plans and retirement accounts, and someone told me one time, but we have a contract. You know, they shouldn't be allowed to break their contract. Are you kidding me? What are you going to do about it? Sue them?
Yeah, right.
You know, you can't sue them, and it's going to be up to people to provide.
And you can. How long have I been telling people what can't be paid won't be paid? All right, this pension business isn't exact. Hey, go ahead, sue me. It's like suing me for $100 trillion. Get yourself a good lawyer. Who knows, maybe you could win. But let me see you collect.
Yep.
There's no point to wasting your time on the lawyer. Guess what? You're not going to collect $100 trillion from me. And you're not going to get it out of the American people. They're going to scream and shout in the middle of a depression. They are not going to watch their taxes rise and sit back and say, oh, sure, we want to support the former government employees. It just isn't going to happen. Which brings us back, where are we going? We're coming to a moment where we are going to learn once again to be personally responsible. We're going to learn that we can't rely on the government to support us and sustain us in difficult times. We can a little bit once in a while, but when the stuff really hits the fan, the government doesn't have the resources to bail us all out. So, you know, and this is part of life. It may be part of that same cycle we're talking about with the economic depression, may be the equivalent to vomiting the poisons out of your system when you've had too much to drink. All right? This business about leaving idiots on the sidelines, yeah, but you promised. Yeah, and you were dumb enough to take the promise of a politician. Right? You were dumb enough to sit back when they said, we're going to give you the moon. We really like you. You're special. You're entitled. Not. You don't have to pay your own retirement. We'll get the idiot taxpayers to pay for it. Well, now we're going to learn the truth. The idiot taxpayers are not going to pay for it, at least not all of it.
I saw a report yesterday where they were talking about all these young adults who wanted the free education and the free stuff until they figured out that, gee, there goes the rest of my salary. So, you know, they're kind of beginning to, you know, understand that there isn't anything free.
There isn't anything free.
You pay.
Somebody's got to pay.
Somebody does.
All right, and it should. If you're the consumer, you should be the one who pays for what you consume. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. As always, we will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, always sunny in a